Hello, and thank you for listening to the Skeptics in the Pub online podcast. This unedited audio is taken from Skepticamp 2024 and was recorded in front of a live audience in Manchester on the 18th of October 2024. A video of this, and many of the recordings hosted by Skeptics in the Pub online, are still available on our YouTube channel. We hope you enjoy this podcast, and if you would like to support what we do, you can join our Patreon. Find us at Patreon, Skeptics in the Pub, online.
Our next speaker is Karen McClure, who's going to be talking about postnatal psychosis.
So I just want to start off with a trigger warning. I will be talking about self-harm, suicide and psychosis in this talk. Hello, my name is Karen, and in June last year, I gave birth to my daughter, Eleanor. Here she is. She's very cute, if I do say so myself, and I do. Prior to her birth, I spent a great deal of time researching labour. I wanted to be as informed as I could be for the event. I wrote a detailed birth plan, spoke to a consultant, read books and watched videos. All of that preparation flew straight out the window when it came to my actual labour and delivery, however. My waters broke, but I was having no contractions, so I was told I was getting an induction. I didn't want an induction, but I felt like the decision was taken out of my hands. I had 2 hours to grab my stuff and eat something before going to the labour and delivery ward. Straight away, I felt quite alone in the process. My assigned midwife, who I'd been seeing throughout my pregnancy, was not working that night, so I had a different one I'd never met before. The first sign that things were not going to go particularly well was when the midwife tried and failed to cannulate me 3 times, leaving my hands swollen, in pain and bruised. It was then explained to me that the induction would take a long time. I was told not to expect anything to really start happening until the next morning. So imagine my surprise when they started me on the drip, and within 2 hours, I was in excruciating pain with contractions every 30 seconds. I was so confused and in so much pain, I could barely process what was happening. I should also say that just as I was started on the drip to begin my labour, the midwife chose that exact time to tell me that naturally redheaded people feel pain more intensely than others. About 3 hours in, I was feeling the urgent need to push. I told the midwife and she didn't believe me. When she eventually checked me, she found I was fully dilated and ready to go. Eleanor was born 4 hours after the drip started. Due to the speed of my labour, there was no time for any pain relief aside from gas and air and a paracetamol. And I was in desperate need for more pain relief. When Eleanor was born, I was so out of it from the pain, I didn't register what had happened. I immediately disassociated, missing out on any immediate bonding with my baby. That disassociation continued for weeks. When Eleanor was 6 weeks old, my mental health fell off a cliff. I would spend all day uncontrollably crying. I felt useless, I felt like a failure, and I felt alone. As time went on, I continued to decline and began self-harming and feeling suicidal. I started planning how I was going to end my life. It was then when I hit rock bottom that the delusion started. I was watching TV one day about something, and there was something about the woman on the screen that wasn't quite right. The thought then popped into my head that that woman was possessed by a demon. That made perfect sense to me. I then began checking everyone else on TV to see if they were possessed too. I started checking all my family and friends. It became an obsession. I believed that I was the only person who could identify the possessed, and therefore it was my duty to identify them. I also believed that my reflection in the mirror was not me. It was a demon trying to trick me, and I would spend long periods of time staring at my reflection, convinced that my reflection was going to do something different. Obviously, it never did. After speaking with mental health services about my thoughts, I was told I was acutely unwell and needed immediate intervention. I didn't believe that I was that unwell at the time, which was just more delusional thinking. I was then admitted to a mother and baby unit. A mother and baby unit is a specialised psychiatric unit for mothers experiencing mental health crisis, either in the pre- or postnatal period. The unit I was in was at Withenshaw Hospital. That is the closest mother and baby unit to me in Liverpool. The next closest is Chorley. Here is a map of all the NHS mother and baby units currently open in the UK. As you can see, there are 17 in England, 2 in Scotland, 1 in Wales, and 0 in Northern Ireland. We obviously need more, but thanks to 14 years of the Tories and their decimation of the NHS, this is what we have available now. I was discharged from the unit after a month on treatment. I will never forget my time there or the staff that helped me find myself again. I also met some of the most incredibly strong and courageous women during my time there, some of which I am still in contact with today. Unfortunately, after 2 months, I relapsed and ended up spending 24 hours in A&E at the Royal Liverpool Hospital. It was horrendous. I was kept in a small, windowless room for 24 hours with a mattress on the floor to sleep on. It felt like I was in a cell whilst in a mental health crisis. But I don't blame the NHS for that. I'll refer you back to my previous comment on the Tories. After my awful A&E stay, I was readmitted to the mother and baby unit for another month. After I was discharged a second time, which was in February this year, I felt like I had turned a corner in my recovery, and thankfully, since then, my mental health has been stable, and I've finally begun enjoying motherhood, something that I had yet to experience being stuck in the fog of postnatal depression. And in May, I completed a 38-mile sponsored walk in aid of Action on Postnatal Psychosis and raised just over £800. 38 miles is the distance from my home in Liverpool to Withenshaw Hospital, where the mother and baby unit was. Part of what caused my depression and eventual psychosis was what I experienced during my labour. I was fortunate not to experience any complications, but the way the process happened and how intense the pain was traumatising for me. I felt completely out of control and unable to advocate for myself during an intense and overwhelming experience. The process of giving birth and the trauma that can come with it is something that is rarely discussed. Women's medical and psychological needs after having a baby historically have been often overlooked. And for trans and non-binary people, having their needs met after birth is even harder. It's no wonder that many pregnant people feel unprepared for the birth process, because the reality of the experience is often kept hidden behind a veil of newborn bubbles, adorable swaddled up cherubs, and glowing new parents. In 2020, Freedom Mom, a company that make postpartum products, created a more realistic-looking advert to show during the Oscars that year. The advert showed a woman in disposable mesh underwear with stretch marks trying to go to the toilet, wincing in pain. The advert was rejected. In January 2024, an inquiry into birth trauma was conducted by an all-party parliamentary group. What they found was a maternity system where poor care is all too frequently tolerated as normal, and women are treated as an inconvenience. The inquiry had more than 1,300 submissions from people who experienced trauma during and after birth. They found, quote, "There were also many stories of care that lacked compassion, including women not being listened to when they felt something was wrong, being mocked or shouted at, and being denied basic needs such as pain relief. Women frequently felt they were subjected to interventions that they had not consented to, and many felt they had not been given enough information to make decisions during birth. The poor quality of postnatal care was an almost universal theme. Women shared stories of being left in bloodstained sheets or of ringing the bell for help, but no one coming. The inquiry also looked into the long-term effects of birth trauma. This included difficulties in bonding with the baby, postnatal depression, stress on the relationship with their partner and wider family, and often an inability to return to work. The inquiry looked at how marginalised groups experience birth trauma, including ethnic minorities, prisoners, the LGBTQIA community, people with autism, and refugees. All were found to be mistreated and thoroughly misunderstood during and after their labour. For example, data from 2020 to 2022 show that black women were almost 4 times as likely as white women to die during pregnancy, childbirth, or the postnatal period, while Asian women were twice as likely to die as white women. Same-sex couples can face prejudice from health professionals, including the assumption that a birthing mother must be heterosexual. They therefore find themselves having to come out repeatedly to health professionals throughout the pregnancy, birth, and postnatal period. And autistic women may appear calm even when in severe distress. And caregivers do not always trust women's reports of being in pain. The inquiry hoped it would start a national conversation about birth trauma, something that wasn't ever discussed in Parliament until October 2023. The The inquiry found that if we are to offer good quality maternity care to everyone, then the focus needs to be on individuality, on care, including mental health care, and on consent. There's a long way to go for birth trauma to be spoken about freely and openly in our society, and a long way to go before birth trauma is fully addressed in our health system, but the inquiry is a good start. I hope me talking about my experience today has been insightful. I want to use my story as a way of spreading awareness to birth trauma, postnatal depression, and psychosis. Postnatal psychosis is a medical emergency and requires immediate intervention. That intervention saved my life, and I am so grateful to be standing here today. Thank you.
We've had a lot of questions, and they're all the same. Is how can we help to make things better?
I think having conversations with people who've had a baby, I think you need to speak to these people, because giving birth is such a unique experience for everyone who does it. No labour is the same. And so the more you talk to people who've been through it, the more understanding you'll have. And it'll just help to prepare people in future for giving birth as well.
Question from Anonymous. What do you think is the best way to support someone you think might be experiencing postnatal psychosis?
It's important to listen to them and understand that psychosis is a terrifying experience, and the beliefs that you have are real to you. So it's important to have that understanding when speaking to someone experiencing that. I'd also say, if you feel able, try and get them in contact with the local perinatal mental health team. That's who helped me. There are charities as well that can help, but I'd say get with the perinatal mental health team, because they're able to then send you out resources and get you the immediate intervention you need.
Question from Adam is, how long did it take you to walk 38 miles?
So I spread it over a weekend. I didn't do it in all one go. But I think altogether it took... let me think. I don't think I actually timed it. No, I didn't time it. It took me over the 3 days. I was doing a lap of a park, which was 2.3 miles. And I did 17 laps the first day, 10 laps the second day, and then 2 laps the day after. So however long that took.
15 hours.
Okay, 15 hours apparently. There we go.
Another question from Anonymous. Are pregnant women being involved in the NHS's plans for reform, do you know?
Honestly, I'm not sure. I don't know what, because obviously there's been that inquiry. I don't know what has been done since then. I'd like to think that they include pregnant women. That would be useful.
And the last question from someone called Emma McClure.
Don't know.
Is why have you put the most impressive McClure first?
Don't think that's a question for me. But I mean, I disagree. But yeah.
Thank you for sharing your story. It's been fantastic. And give it up for Karen McClure.
That was the Skeptics in the Pub online podcast. For more skeptical content, including information about future talks, please like us on Facebook, follow @SITP on Twitter, or head to our website at sitp.online, where you'll also find a link to all the ways you can get in touch with us, including our Discord server. Music in this episode was provided by Thula Bora and used with permission. Until next time, thanks for listening.